What is up, everyone? This is Fireside Yankees, and we've got our star-studded panel back again, Chris, Jacob, and myself. You can follow us on social media, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and, of course, this YouTube page, and our new Patreon, which we'll have links to all in the description. Today, we're talking about the Paul Blackburn signing. He is back, the premier starting pitching target on my board. Michael King is off the board. I don't think any of us anticipated he'd be a Yankee, but he is off the board, and we'll talk about what that means for the starting pitching market. And we've got your mailbag questions, all of that and more, again here on Fireside Yankees. But before we get into everything, we're going to go across the panel. How's everybody doing? Chris, get me started. How you doing, man?
Really great, man. I got my eyes on Jacob because he's a Miami fan, so we got a battle coming up in the college football world in about a week. But I'm no, we broke it 20 years ago. We'll do it again. But I'm good, man. I'm excited to be here. Excited to talk Yankees. And, you know, obviously a ton's happened the past week, so I'm ready to kind of unpack everything the Yankees did.
Yes, I'm very much anticipating the Miami versus Ohio State game on New Year's Eve. Miami won a great one against A&M. It was a very low scoring game, very defensive game, very fun, terrible kicking all throughout, but yeah, it was a great time. So my spirits are up. Almost Christmas, we're ready. Let's see what Cashman can deliver us under the tree.
Well, it's going to require him to get out of his hibernation, which he did briefly do. He did do on Saturday when he inked right-handed starting pitcher Paul Blackburn to a one-year, $2 million contract. I'll start with Chris here. Chris, give me your reaction to Paul Blackburn being back on the New York Yankees.
You know, honestly, big shrugs, don't love it. Obviously, like, I'd prefer a Blackburn move being after, like, another major move was made. I don't think he's great, doesn't move the needle. Obviously, like, was in New York for 15 innings last year. You know, the underlying metrics aren't great. Nothing's great about it, but just kind of, I hope, just an irrelevant $2 million that they spent is really no real strong feelings about this one.
Jacob, I'll let you go there, too.
I mean, I kind of feel the same way. I don't think it's, like, the biggest needle mover either direction. It's $2 million for a depth arm, and we're obviously going to need some depth. We have three starting pitchers on the IL to start the season. You can always pencil in probably a fourth or maybe a fifth one going on the IL in the spring. You're going to need some long relief guys. You're going to need some starters to make some spot starts early in the season, especially before those guys come back from the injured list. So I have no reason to complain about this. They picked up Blackburn last year for a reason. They like his stuff. They think they could do something with him. And he wasn't even that bad with us. Like, he had a good strikeout minus walk rate. The stuff isn't incredible or anything, but obviously there's a reason. I trust Matt Blake and I trust Cashman to bring in these type of guys who they like for some reason and make them into something that they haven't been.
I'm with you guys on the point of this is $2 million. It's too, like, it does not affect, in my opinion, I think it's crazy talk when we start going, this is going to stop them from adding a starting pitcher. It's very clearly not going to stop them from adding a starting pitcher.
Agree, yeah, agree.
Where this does become an issue for me is that when they eventually add pitchers, which they will, and it's not going to be Paul Blackburn types, they're going to add an impact starter and they're going to add an impact reliever. I'll at least say I can guarantee the impact reliever. I'd be stunned if they walked away without one. But where it becomes messy is once you start adding these players and once they start filling out your roster, once you get to spring training and you're making decisions on who's going to make the team and who's not going to make the team, you've got to make some business decisions. Now, when you've got to make it for Ryan Yarbrough to stay on the roster, that's fine, right? You're going to need a Ryan Yarbrough in some capacity. If I've got to set down either Brent Hedrick or Jake Bird, one of whom I traded a top 10 prospect in the system for Paul Blackburn, I'm making my roster worse. I just am. My roster is worse. The opportunity cost is not financial. It is not in trade capital. It is not in what you can do to add to your rotation. The opportunity cost is the roster spot. He has a guaranteed roster spot. And if I learned anything from last year's spring training, in which it took a Clark Schmidt shoulder injury for them to not option Will Warren for Carlos freaking Carrasco, I'm under the belief that if they have a player who has options, who's better than Paul Blackburn, or Paul Blackburn for that 26th spot or that 13th spot on the pitching side, he will make the team. And I think that right there is my problem. Well, I'll let you guys kind of go from there.
I think you've overblown this. You really had a strong reaction about this on Twitter. Was it yesterday or the day before, whenever it happened? But I think we went into the year last year. Adam Ottavino was on the opening day roster. Marcus Stroman and Carlos Carrasco were making starts all throughout April and May. And guess what? we were the best team in baseball in April and May. It doesn't matter. You don't have to have your best roster ready on opening day. Having a guy like Blackburn just available in case something happens in the spring is better than having Cookie Carrasco. He's a better player than Cookie Carrasco was. I think having Blackburn, there's no downside. Like, if everyone this is a problem for if everyone goes into the year healthy on March 31st or whenever the opening day is. And if that happens, then, oh no, we're going to have to move either demote Jake Bird, who wasn't much better than Blackburn last year, or if we think Jake Bird looked good in the spring, we could trade Blackburn to someone who does need an arm, because someone will need an arm. It's going to be people get hurt in spring training more than any other time in the year. So I have no issue with this. There's space to add another one or two relievers and another starter, and I'm still comfortable with this roster. And I have no issue with Blackburn taking up a spot on opening day.
Okay, I guess to ask the question, because I think what Ryan's really concerned about is if guys are healthy, he'll be the guy that's given the nod over someone with options because of the options. Does that worry you at all in that baseball?
I don't care. Like, do you think Jake Bird is that much more of a sure thing than Paul Blackburn?
You have to let
But
him
I think
pitch.
The investment into Jake Bird is the issue, right?
Right.
Like, it's a battle of investment, maybe.
Well, this is just sunk cost fallacy. Then, if you go into the spring and you've done something with Blackburn, if Blake can make Blackburn looks very similar to me in terms of how this move has been performed. We brought him in at the end of the year. We threw him 15 or so innings. That reminds me just like Luke Weaver 2023. We brought in Weaver after he got cut at the end of the year by some other team. He pitched. He wasn't even good with us, and then we brought him back. We brought him back on like a short term deal, 1+1. And we turn him into a really good reliever. And I know Ryan's big issue with Blackburn is the lack of velocity. Well, guess what? Luke Weaver's fastball was 93 miles per hour in 2023, and it was also bad shape if you look at the Stuff Plus. So clearly they think they could do something with Blackburn in a similar vein to what they did with Weaver. So if he looks good in the spring, they're basically gambling on him figuring something out in the spring, which I have no issue with because they've done this before and to great success. So I don't know how you can get upset about it in December when the roster's not even done, first of all. And second of all, you have to expect at least a handful of pitching injuries in spring training.
I think that's fair. And I will also make a couple of points in your favor. The first reaction you're going to get on the Luke Weaver comparison is you can't compare him to Luke Weaver. You could also have said that about Luke Weaver and comparing that to, like, Clay Holmes. Like, if you told me on February 2024, Luke Weaver's the next Clay Holmes, I'd tell you, that is a crazy thing to say. I mean, that is a 99th percentile outcome. As I would probably tell you with Paul Blackburn on December 22nd, 2025. So I do recognize that these things, in order for these miracle outcomes or these like great player development success stories, requires you to acquire a player who your initial impression of them is that they're not very good. I think that right away is a point I will concede. But as we get back into player, like, this is not even a Paul Blackburn specific thing. This is the way the Yankees manage their roster. So one thing I really have a gripe with, and it is that they prioritize having bad players on the roster on the pitching side just to have bodies. Like, maybe I'm just not over the Carrasco thing. That might be it.
The Carrasco thing didn't even hurt us in the end. Like, what?
But
don't we always operate process, not outcome? Like,
even though it
didn't end up hurting us, I think it's the process is the issue.
No, sure, but if you're gambling on it, it didn't work out because he ended up being worse than we thought he was going to be. If we knew he was going to be that bad, I don't think we would have gone into the year with him as the starter.
I will say, I thought Carlos Carrasco was so bad that I wasn't sure he was better than Alan Winters. That is a thing I did believe. I did believe that. So I can at least say for myself, and this is another thing with spring training even, if spring training can mean so much that you can genuinely convince yourself that old man Carlos Carrasco is going to turn around his career or be even remotely effective at the big league level because of spring training,
Cookie in 2024, he was bad. He was really not, he wasn't good at all, right? But he got a lot of chases, he got a lot of ground balls, got some weak contact. Like, he ended up being much worse than what he was the previous year, and that's why he was so terrible with us. Like,
with the Braves, he was really bad. With us, he was I think I did rankings or like tier list. I didn't give him an F. I thought it was like a D performance. Like, given he's a minor league signing and you were able to win some baseball games, or he gave you winnable performances.
And again, I think Blackburn is better than Carrasco was. Blackburn is there, so we don't have to have another Carrasco situation this year. And it also has more upside than someone like Carrasco did. That's like, I don't see the downside here. Just because he might take up someone's roster spot in 3 months, you don't like the move. Again, if we're in a situation where Bird looks really good in the spring and Blackburn's the only reason he wouldn't be on the roster, we could just trade Blackburn. Someone's going to want that a warm body to eat up some innings for $2 million. That's a tradable contract. It's not like he's immovable now.
I just want to – I think I'd have to, like – it's weird. I'd almost, like, kind of need, like it's this sounds, like, really pathetic. I would kind of need Brian Cashman to sit down and talk to me and be like, hey, this
over
is the
Paul
game.
But again, this is – Paul Blackburn, on the 13th arm on the roster. We have Cade Winquest is in our bullpen right now, Rule 5 pick. If he's not good, we just send him away. This situation is only bad for us if everyone is healthy and everyone is good in the spring, and then Blackburn is taken. That's a great situation to be in. If Bird looks good, if Cruz is healthy and good, if Duvall's looking good, if Hedrick looks good, and if Winquest looks good, then it's an issue because Blackburn's blocking someone. And if that's the case, our bullpen's pretty damn good either way.
I will give you two concessions. Number one, I think I'm clearly discounting the fact that Paul Blackburn could just be a decent major league pitcher, and I am discounting the fact that one, like, Jake Bird could actually be just terrible. But I do believe, and this I don't it's not that it's like even sunk cost fallacy to me. I actually do think Jake Bird can be pretty good, and I also strongly believe this with Brent Hedrick. You need to get these guys innings. Like, if there is going to be something you're losing if they're not pitching now, because Brent Hedrick was especially a big victim of this.
Honestly,
not pitching him in April is a big reason why you couldn't use him in October, because you didn't give him enough innings for him to be comfortable and settled. And that guy clearly was better. He was one of your 8 best relievers last
year. I think that's the case for Hedrick. I don't know. Hedrick also had some injury stuff. His fastball velo was up and down.
He was healthy in September. They left him down there. Like, he did not rehab down there and then shut down.
I think the issue
left him down there.
I think the issue they had with him, though, was that when the times that he looked good for a week or two, and then the third week his fastball velo would fall off.
Yes.
I don't know. I think that's an issue that he never proved himself throughout the year. Obviously they didn't like what they saw enough in AAA for him to come up by the end in terms of consistency. And I think that's totally reasonable. Trust me, I love Hedrick. I love the makeup he has there. And I think he's going to be a big part of our bullpen this year. But there are reasons for all of these moves. Like, Jake Bird, I think, is in a different camp because he's gotten so many MLB innings. I think you just need to make tweaks for him. He pitched really well in Coors. You need him to make some tweaks to pitch better at sea level. And that can be done in bullpen sessions. That can be done in side sessions. You don't have to be doing that against major league hitters. So these guys are all going to be looking a lot different come pitchers and catchers reporting. They're going to have different repertoires. They're going to be working on different things. And in a perfect world where everything works out, yes, Blackburn probably shouldn't be on the roster. But odds are we have 3 or 4 different guys right now that require a lot of work to become good relievers. And odds are not all of them are going to work out. So Blackburn is there because he has a floor as someone who can eat innings and not be the worst.
If Paul Blackburn performs very well, I will sit here on this show and I will, like, you're getting, like, the craziest glazed job any podcast.
But I don't love the move either. I just think you're overreacting because anything cool yet. And Paul Blackburn is just another one of those little tiny end of the roster moves before we've done anything else. So I think I understand the frustration, but I think you're being overblown in it.
Is because, yeah, I kind of agree. You're talking this out. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm kind of doing the thing I loathe so much with some Yankee fans. So yeah, I am kind of overreacting. This is
if we signed
out about a hypothetical situation that could never come to pass.
You know, if we signed Tatsuya Imai or we traded for Mackenzie Gore and then an hour later we signed Paul Blackburn, you would never be upset about the Paul Blackburn move. That's my point. I think it's just you're itching for a Christmas present and you got underwear.
It's December 22nd. Like, that's why. It's December 22nd and the movement we've got has been pretty minuscule.
So do we all agree that I was overreacting a little bit?
Yes.
Is that the agreement we can agree on one point there?
Yes.
Well, I think Ryan was over there. I think me and
okay. Okay. I agree. I was overreacting. Kind of listening to, I guess, hearing myself out and then hearing your points. Yeah. There's a lot of, like, again, I'm freaking out about a situation that could literally never come to pass. And I'm essentially saying if the Yankees make the wrong process move, this is bad. And that's a lot of ifs. One of those ifs being arms surviving, which I guarantee you one of the two of the 13 guys currently projected to be on the roster will tear their UCLs between now and April 13th.
Yeah,
is that crazy to say?
I mean, it's not crazy to say, but it's just an unfortunate reality of it's an unfortunate reality of pitching. Yeah. And I'm looking at, you just look at the 40 man right now. The only other starting options on the 40 man are Chase Hampton, who's always hurt and he hasn't been healthy in a while.
He currently has it. His UCL is currently being reconstructed.
And then Elmer Rodriguez, who is in Double A, he's never pitched above Double A. So it's like you needed more guys that could give you length. In my opinion.
I will also say this should give you this is another part of this. They should be willing to trade out of their starting pitching depth. I don't know if you want to call it like minor league, major league. You know what I'm talking about. The Heels, the Warrens, the Rodriguez's, four upgrades on the roster.
If it comes to a point where we add starting pitching, like if we go out there and sign an MI, which doesn't seem like it's going to happen based on the reports, or if we go out and trade for Mackenzie Gore, I think there's a good chance if we trade for Mackenzie Gore, Will Warren or Luis Heel is going back in return for him. So I think it does give us a little bit more flexibility in terms of the back end of the rotation in April, which is the only, like, I think it's fine. I think it's fine because of that. You take that for $2 million.
And depending on who you get, and depending on even the package, like if it's a Dominguez-headed package and you're, like, trading Heel, you're not trading, like LaGrange in this scenario, or even, let's say, you're not trading Rodriguez in this scenario, and your pitching depth looks like Fried, Schlittler, acquired pitcher, Warren, Yarbrough, Rodon, Cole, Schmidt, Rodriguez. Like, at that point, you've got depth and front-end talent, and Blackburn in that mix as well. Okay. Yeah, I've talked myself into this. It's all right.
Oh, look at that. I win. I win.
I'm okay. Yes, I concede.
I'm a gladiator. They don't know that about me yet.
Has anyone ever gotten me to admit I'm wrong on the podcast? Like, I've sparred with Alex a few times. I've sparred with viewers a few times, and I've never been like, no, you guys are actually right.
Well, the viewers, they don't know what they're talking about, so.
Hey. Those are my shooters. I got chill on them. Chris, you got any final thoughts on how this could impact some of the Yankees' future moves? I think we're all in agreement. It's not going to stop them from doing something.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just feel like I had a front seat to a heavyweight fight, a real one this time. So I was in.
I'm Anthony Joshua. He's Jake Paul.
Okay, bro. I can't lie. Seeing, like, the Paul Blackburn stuff, I was upset. But, like, I didn't know there were fights going off that weekend. Seeing the video of Jake Paul going down and then finding out that, like, I'm not going to mention the name, but we all know who we're talking, how I'm talking about. The other dude who went down, who does not have hair, that was phenomenal. That was a generational hate watch. And then on top of all of it, like, man, the only thing that ruined it was the Patriots winning because, like, I can't, like, shit on Dave Poitner again.
I won money on that, though, so that was fun.
That's fair. That's fair.
Good bet by me.
Yeah. No, I just my hate watch trifecta was this close, man. This close. Dave Poitner crashed out on top of it. Chef's kiss. Any final thoughts you guys have on Mr. Blackburn?
No, I think I've said my piece.
Well, we're going to move on and we're staying in the starting pitching conversation, but we're going to move on to a different pitcher. Michael King is off the board. He signs a 3-year, $75 million contract loaded with opt-outs, including an opt-out after the 2026 season. He's back in the Padres. The Yankees were rumored to be in, but never officially made an offer, according to John Heyman. Immediate thoughts. We'll start with Chris here. Chris, Did you think the Yankees should have been in on Michael King? And B, do you think this will open the starting pitching market up?
I think I warmed up to it the longer he kind of lurked around. Obviously, like in those coming days, right before he signed with the Padres, there was like a general feeling that maybe he could return to New York. And when that happens, you know, you see on social media, right? And as a big Twitter guy, you see all the videos of Michael King with the guys and Michael King pitching for the Yankees. So I was kind of warming up to the idea and would have loved it. At the same time, it didn't feel crushing when he signed back with the Padres, if that makes sense. And I hope this gets the starting pitching market moving because obviously, like, the Yankees, I think, need to add one, so that's really important. But, you know, all in all, I would have loved to have him back, but, you know, I wasn't crushed by him signing with the Padres, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. I kind of was blindsided by this a little bit because all the reports were saying all the AL East teams were scrapping for King, and then he stays with San Diego. But I think the contract he signed is great for the player and great for the team. It only really makes sense for San Diego because they don't have to pay any draft compensation. If we were to do this deal, we'd have to pay, what was it, a second and a fifth round pick. Yeah. And there's a chance it would only be a one-year deal if he had a really good season. So I don't think that would have been worth our time. And the way he structured it with the three opt-outs, it's a fairly player-friendly deal in that sense because he's making a pretty good baseline of money. But if he shows up and pitches really well, he can hit the market again next year and maybe get a 9-figure contract. So, and it works for San Diego because they're in a financial, they're pretty inflexible financially. They really need him to pitch well and opt out, honestly, because then they'd be paying him like $28 million next year or something, or at 2027 or something like that. So I think it's a perfect match for them. I'm glad he's not in the division on a different team, and I don't think I would have liked this deal if we did it. So I'm pretty happy.
I agree with you guys completely here. There are moves that you're like, damn. And King was more like, damn, it would have been cool to see him back, but you know, I wasn't. There are pits in your stomach moves. The kinds of moves where you see and go, oh my god. Like you start sweating. You're like, you don't want to check Yankee Twitter. You're just like, you need a couple seconds to kind of recollect yourself from the initial disappointment you feel. I remember when Jack Curry, I got that notification the day that Yamamoto signed. I'm like, oh my god. And then I saw Yoshinobu Yamamoto, like, oh my god. And I was like, Dodgers, like, that dude, hurt. Michael King is not close to that.
I wanted
nothing
Yamamoto
like
so bad, dude.
I did too. But to kind of tie this all back to Michael King, this is a contract you should not give up draft picks for. It's just not. And I understand this is going to sound like real nerd talk here, but if the Yankees essentially said, we are giving up on waiting out the Kyle Tucker market. We're giving up on waiting out anybody else's market to sign Michael King to a 3-year, $75 million deal where it is very possible he just blows out his arm and is on underwater contract for 2 years. This isn't even like fear-mongering. That is a real risk with Michael King.
Yeah, and I think the best case with the contract is he pitches really well for 1 year, and then he hits the market again. You either got to pay up a lot more after you've already just paid your draft compensation, or you're letting him walk. So it's like
and you're probably going to let him walk.
It's a good deal for San Diego because they don't have to pay. It's a good deal for King because he's got flexibility. So I'm glad we stayed away, ultimately.
And I think also to kind of tie this up and kind of get a heat check for all of us here, if you were to do you think the Yankees will end up adding a starter? I guess that's my first part of this question. So do you think the Yankees will end up adding a starter? And if so, who is your prediction for who they end up adding? Jacob, we'll start with you here.
I'm looking at the free agents right now. I don't think any of the remaining big timers make much sense, but I could see us doing something that would really piss a lot of people off. Maybe like a Patrick Corbin on like a 1 year, $5 million plus incentives, something like that. And he actually wasn't that bad this year. He's surprisingly, he's better than you'd think based on how, you know, he had someone in his political party take office and he locked back in. But that'll piss a lot of people off, but I could see that happening realistically. I think we were in on him back in 2019 when he was a free agent initially. So we've shown that we've talked with this player before. But on the trade market, I think that's where we can go get a real big piece. And obviously Mackenzie Gore is probably the most realistic one right now. I hold firm that Freddie Peralta is not going to be traded. So I think if we're going to make a big move, it'll be Mackenzie Gore. And if we go with a smaller move in free agency, I think it'll be Patrick Corbin.
Question, do you think it's more likely we trade for one or sign one?
I'd say trade, not even, like, there was a point in time where I really thought Imai was going to happen, but even at that point I would tell you trade because there are just more players I think they're willing to trade for than sign. Is that the vibe you guys get, too, that it's just a plethora of options?
I think the top flight options, it's like Ranger Suarez and Framber Valdez. I don't think we want to pay their rate or the draft compensation. And based on what Boris is demanding for Imai, I don't think we're going to go up that high right now either. So,
if Framber Valdez throws at Austin Wells, I'm booing his ass off the field. I never do. Yo, I would. He did that to Ben Rice. If he does that to Ben Rice, he'd be the first Dominican, like, good Dominican baseball player I hate with a passion.
Well, if he throws at Wells, that's Dominican on Dominican crime right there.
Bro,
so.
I'm fighting. Dude, if he threw at Ben Rice or Austin Wells, I'm fighting him. I'm getting on that. Now you got to get through me. Now you get through me, dog.
Now you'll see a real heavyweight fight.
I'm getting my shit rocked, and it's a 10-second fight.
Framber looks like he's a psycho, dude.
We referenced the Jake Paul incident. That's happening again, just at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, the smiles.
He has good numbers, though.
You know, I'm kind of just waiting. Obviously, like, I think we're all in agreement that the MI doesn't seem like it's happening. And then, obviously, the other one is, like, Mackenzie Gore is kind of who I would like in terms of, like, big splash. But I don't really feel good about anything to predict it, I guess, at this kind of point. It does feel weird because it does feel like so much time has passed in this free agency, but yet everybody's still on the board. It's one of the stranger off seasons that I remember, unless in the past I just shrunk time and all this stuff usually happens this slow. So,
Yeah, I will also clarify, I was joking about the Framber thing. For like our credibility, I was joking.
Yeah, oh yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I'm very much joking. Second part of this, I'm going to leave this as question mark. Question mark in the sense of, do they add a starter? I think they do. And who? Like, I think it's going to be – I have a weird feeling this is going to be more of that, like, pull it out of your ass trade, where they, like, either A, land a starter who's making some money and you bring them in. They're maybe not worth the contract, or the team's not really that into the player anymore. Not, like, a long-term – like, I mean, like, a 1 or 2 year kind of guy. I think that's the range for contract. Framber is like a guy where I think he could get a short-term deal, and I think it'll be with the Mets. Like, I think if he gets a short-term deal with opt-outs, it's going to be with the New York Mets. Like, that's the vibe I get. Room. It would, you know, now that I think about it, they just traded McNeil for pennies on the dollar, so maybe not. Maybe the Giants do that. I mean, they already did it once with Snell. They actually did it twice, Snell and Chapman, so that's like a team that's done it before. Point is, I don't think it's with the Yankees. I don't think they're giving up draft compensation for that.
Oh, I got a sneaky one.
Oh, who you got for me?
If I've heard issues with this in the past, Chris Bubich. I love the pitcher Chris Bubich. I love him. I've heard Kansas City is shopping him because his arm is total pulled pork, is what people have said.
I heard he has a partial tear in that UCL dog. Yeah. But I heard that shit is fried.
20 starts, 3.3 F4, 2.55 ERA this past season. He gets a lot of whiffs, gets a lot of strikeouts, doesn't walk too many, and then limits the damage contact. I would take the gamble. It's 1 year. He's a free agent after this upcoming season, I believe. So if it, and based on how they're shopping him around, it seems like he's not going to be that expensive. So you could gamble on that, potentially get a really good number two starter for less than he's worth because of the injury risk. And I would be willing to take that chance.
I would also like to throw out, and I wrote about him today, and I've been in the controversy mix on Yankee Twitter. I would call up the Reds and be like, yo, what do you want for Nick Lodolo, dog? Like, I think he'd be a rock star in New York. He'd be awesome. And yes, I would trade Jason Dominguez. And if the Reds were like Jason for Lodolo, I'm packing his bags immediately. They would not do that, to clarify. I would pack his bags immediately. I would do it before even signing. I would do this not knowing who my left fielder is. I would do it tomorrow.
Frankly,
I would do it and add prospects.
Frank, I saw your mock trade. You had a Trevino coming back too.
Yeah,
but
swap Escobar and Trevino. Help them free up some cash. Like we do not have the facilities to be outbidding teams in trade battles. Like if the Mets are like, yo, we want him, they're getting him.
That's the issue.
What you
I have
can
with
do
this.
Is eat money.
I don't think we could win this trade. Like if Lodolo's on the market, I really don't think we win this deal. Like there's too many good teams that could use, like the Mariners. If the Mariners enter this conversation, they kill us in a trade. The Mets enter this conversation, they probably kill us in a trade. And the Mets could eat money too. They have the ability to do that.
So I think
unless they really love Dominguez or really love Hess, that if that's the case, then I would do it absolutely. But the odds that that's the case are pretty low. Like they didn't trade us Luis Castillo because they didn't like Volpe back in the day. I don't think they're going to – I'm not saying Yankees tax, but I'm saying I just don't think we have enough prospect capital to compete with the other teams who would be in on him.
I would also say in regard to Lodolo, the one like copium here is that all of the teams you mentioned cannot offer a starting outfielder. And I think that is a bigger weakness on their roster than people think. Like at the corners, it's not like it's good, but they're locked into Ke'Bryan Hayes. They're paying him money. They're going to play him next year. Ellie De La Cruz, they're going to play him next year. Sal Stewart, I think, is a corner infielder as well. He's going to play. Spencer Steele played really good first base defense. He's going to play first base. The one area where, like, I could see them trying to improve in terms of, like, their roster and it's not the outfield is second base. But even then, if they get an outfielder, you could just put Gavin Lux there. And I think Gavin Lux, at the second baseman, is better than Gavin Lux, the left fielder. It all comes back to player evaluations. If they do not like Jason Dominguez, you can't get him.
Lux is penciling as their everyday left fielder right now, which is kind of crazy. Actually, he's a platoon left fielder with Strand, which I don't know how they're going to mix things up with. Yeah, I don't know. They got a lot of guys who had good pedigree but haven't panned out so far. So I could see them going. And I think Jason would do well in that park too. Smaller outfield, he hits some homers.
Yeah, and then again, like tying it all back to comparing it to other teams, the Mets can't offer this like, hey, plug and play, put him in the outfield guy. You could offer Jett Williams, and I'm sure there is a Major League Baseball team that thinks Jett Williams is good, but I think most teams would, if you're a Major League Baseball team, who are you betting on contributing more WAR next year? Jet Williams in center field or Jason Dominguez in left field?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with this. I could go on and on about my Jet Williams.
I think he's too.
I think he's too small, frankly. And I know Jason's not tall, but he's got size on him, and he's fast as hell. I just don't think Jet's got the measurables to be a big time MLB bat.
Chris, I want to ask you this because you are someone who I know is like in the weeds with prospects and like you're out there, bro. Like you're not too far from Nick Lodolo. You're not too far from that.
Yeah,
that.
Dude, I would.
You're in that market.
Yeah.
Number one, what do you think the Reds would want? And number two, like, are you trading Jason for Nick? Jason plus. It's not. Jason plus for Nick Lodolo.
Yeah, no, I'm trading Jason plus. I mean, you know me, Ryan. Like, I'm really big into the, okay, like, let's get players that we know they are ready to go right now. And because obviously, like, my whole goal is to, you know, expand the window or, like, make the window as big as possible during Judge's time, you know, in his prime. So, no, I would absolutely send Dominguez plus. I mean, right now, I feel like we're going to be in a little bit of an outfield jam anyway. And, you know, the moving a Dominguez puts more pressure to go spend on an outfielder. So, no, I'm all the way in. I'd absolutely move him. Now, I'm kind of with MLB baseball. I don't know if the Reds would sign up for any of that, but I'd help him pack with you, Ryan.
Today,
I drive.
This podcast panel are not just people. They are not just agreeing with me to agree with me. I am not crazy for saying you can trade Jason Dominguez, and you if you got Nick Lodolo back, you would run to the hilltops and you would say you robbed the Cincinnati Reds blind. Sorry.
No, like, people were mad at you on Twitter for posting that, I'm sure. Like Yankees fans. Well,
I thought I was going to get killed by Reds fans. Waiting.
One of the things with and you see this with like more regional sports. I view college football as a regional sport. MLB baseball is also more of a regional sport. And what happens is like people within whatever, you know, ecosystem will fall in love with a prospect so much that like the idea of that prospect leaving, I think kind of like makes everybody tighten up a little bit. And because like there's no kind of sight on what the Reds have going on in terms of like base Yankee fandom. It's like not good enough because he's not a famous enough name yet to the point where people wouldn't really get super excited about that. So that's more of a regionality thing, less of a you were wrong thing, to be honest. I mean, and obviously, and that's baseball kind of, you know, has a full grasp on baseball nationally. And I, you know, living in Ohio and covering the other team in Ohio, I they're just in my peripherals a little bit more. So that's more what that is about. I'm, you know, I think, shoot, like Cashman would agree with you. Like what?
Dude, I think everyone in the industry views Lodolo much in higher regard than the average Yankees Twitter user. So,
and I would just love him here. Like Nick Lodolo, there's just a draw. There's just an aura appeal, man. That dude throwing 15 degree arm angle, big curveballs, fastballs top of the zone. I need it, man. I need it. Give that man Matt Blake. If he can turn Paul Blackburn into a decent reliever, he can do a nickel. He could turn Nick Lodolo into a
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he's turning him into he's
dude, that'd be a lot of lefties in the rotation too.
I rock with it, man.
Lodolo doesn't walk anyone.
That's the other thing. Yeah. There's such a I can't, dude. You know how much of a man you got to be to not walk people in pitching in freaking Cincinnati?
That's true, too. Like, I think people
you got to be a man to do that.
What do you have? He had 3.33 ERA this year. In Cincy, that's like a fucking – that's like a 290 in the average park. Pitching
you
a 3.33
balls,
in Cincy.
Bro. You got – like, this is where, you know, you kind of – that should – I ditched analytics for a second here.
This is analytics, Ryan. This is what we call manalytics.
Bro, you got to have balls to be like, I'm a zone filler in Cincinnati. Yeah. I'm a zone filler, and I still strike people out. And I'm like, you're a zone filler? Are you kidding me?
Zone filler who doesn't even throw 99 miles an hour. He throws like 93, 94.
It's 94.
You guys ever seen Jared Weaver? You ever seen the Jared Weaver interview clip where he hits a guy and he goes, come get this 88. Like that shit, bro. That I need guys. Like,
was that when he was beefing with Kyle Seager?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, dude, that's such a great clip.
Oh, man, dude. I do actually think the staff has a little bit of like not enough zone fillers. Not because I think these guys are mentally weak or whatever. I don't think they have the command. That's not like I'm not. You should not actually measure mental toughness on your walk rate. To clarify, guys, that's
no.
Not...
You should no. You should. I like this. I like this new measurement.
Yeah, Luis Hill is a very fragile individual.
Yeah, fragile
Blake Snell
upstairs.
Blake Snell is very easily scared. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the conclusion I'm drawing here. Now, we're going to move on to our mailbag. We've got a lot of questions from our Patreon, and we want to thank everyone who joined the Patreon, free members, paid members, all of you guys. Really appreciate the support, and we're really excited to dig into these questions. We're going to just jump right into them. We're going to start with a question from X. If we lose out on re-signing Bellinger, any thoughts on trading for Castellanos? With Philly trying to move him, it probably wouldn't cost much and helps you get a righty bat to platoon in left field Dominguez. I'm only going to say absolutely not, and I'll let you guys go from there.
I'd rather see Ryan Garcia out there.
I'm drilling a home run.
I think
I'll get one.
I think Castellanos in Yankee Stadium left field might be the worst defensive player in MLB history, frankly. Like, I'm not even kidding. No, I'm not joking.
No, I'm not.
I think
the fact that you're not kidding makes it even funnier.
He was in Philadelphia's right field, which is tiny, and he was terrible. I think he's the worst defender over the last, like, he was, like, even worse than Schwarber when they had Schwarber in the outfield at some times. Like, it's, he's, like, he's basically, like, if Jorge Soler also couldn't hit, that's who you're getting in Castellanos. I that guy's probably never going to play in MLB again, if I had to guess. He's also, with his locker room stuff, he was complaining about his manager, and he was complaining about coming out of games for defense. It's, like, he sucks on defense, he sucks at hitting, and he's a... seems like a dickhead behind the scenes. So it's like, I don't see the upside here.
I love his Savant page, though.
Yeah. I mean, I would much rather watch Framber Valdez hit Austin Wells with a pitch intentionally than hear Nick Castellanos go, why was I subbed out for defense? Mm-hmm. That would piss me off, I think, infinitely more.
He didn't even hit lefties well this year. 87 WRC plus against lefties, lower ISO against lefties, higher strikeout rate against lefties. So it's not even a reliable platoon option.
Yeah, I'm not. We can move on from this point. Like, we are all, like, Nick Castellanos would, if Nick X. Castellanos to the Yankees, even on a minimum contract, I would freak out.
X, I love you, but that, like, that's gotta be a troll. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. We're gonna move on to the next one from Michael Schaefer. Any relation to the all-time great Islander player who is going to be the best athlete in New York one day? Right now, I believe what A-Rod said about the Yankees are not good at hitting. Power is nice. It may get you to the postseason, but it won't win it. Yankees don't need another large contract. They already have too many and will wind up like the Phillies back in the day. Let's go young and give them a shot. Guys, what are your thoughts on A, the idea that the Yankees hit for too much power, and B, the idea of embracing going with all your rookies and young players? I'm assuming for the outfield. Jacob, we'll start with you.
I mean, I don't think we hit for too much power. I think there's an argument to be made that maybe we have too many power hitters that are park reliant, because it's like you have Jazz and Bellinger, who are definitely better bats in Yankee Stadium. And then if you're going to have to play half your games on the road in the postseason. So if the lineup gets significantly worse on the road, I could see why that would be an argument against trying to add a bunch of pull fly ball lefty guys into one lineup. But I don't think it's a problem. I think we were still the number one offense in baseball this past year. I think we just ended up having a bad postseason. I think people have a kind of idea about, they don't want too much of the same thing in the lineup. You need to have a little bit of diversity in the lineup in terms of what guys can do. And I think there may be some credence to that, but I think too much power, I don't think there's such thing as too much power. I just think we need to have production at every position optimally, and maybe we can improve the bomb half the order production, but overall I think we're in a good spot lineup wise regardless of it, whether we add another bat or not.
The playoff pitchers PR team for the New York Yankees has to be the greatest PR team of all time, because like, we only are talking about the, like, obviously, like, in the postseason, like, bats fall off naturally, you're facing better pitchers. I mean, it's obviously way tighter, but it's like, the bats kind of, I think, catch some strays, when really the real supervillain of the playoffs was the pitching.
Max Fried gave up like 5 million runs in game 2, and everyone was like, "Man, if only like the offense could do something." It's like the game was over in the third inning.
Mm-hmm.
Man, if only the offense showed up in game 1 of the World Series, they had a lead. Like, there are so many situations where it's like, dude, they could have just won that game. Like, they totally...
No,
like,
you're right. And the fact that A-Rod... Because A-Rod, bro, he does this, man. And it's so frustrating. He'll get up there, and instead of addressing what the actual problem is, he approaches things from a standpoint of like, well, I know everything, and the issue is the hitting, not the pitching. And it's like, dog, you just want to talk about when you hit in 09 and how cool that was, instead of like talking about the fact that the pitching was non-existent. It was, I mean, I love Max to death, but it was just meatball after meatball, it felt like.
I think the funniest part about A-Rod's whole gimmick is that he was a power hitter, especially at the end of his career when he was older. He was good at everything when he was young. But when he was older, he had that really good year as the DH in 2015. He was pretty much a power or bust guy. He was whiffing a ton, striking out a ton, and he was still productive because he hit so many homers. So it's like, coming from him, it's pretty funny. I think a lot of it is posturing. Like, I don't think he truly, deeply believes it as much as you'd think. I think a lot of it is he's trying to pander a little bit to maybe older type.
I don't think more than pandering. It's like, it's
grifting. Can we say it for what it is? It's grifting.
It's grifting, like, but it's also like, it's the thing where like you want to sensationalize it and remember something bigger and better than it used to be.
Yes, it is. It's like back in our day, our lineups, that picture.
It's the NBA basketball thing, bro.
Yes, it is.
He went, Kenny Smith went between his legs off the backboard, reverse dunk. It's like, okay.
My brain is so messed up that not only do I know the clip you're talking about, I also know, in my head is playing like the reels or the TikToks.
Yeah.
And transitioning to the actual play, which is one of the lamest dunk attempts I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And in regard to like sensationalizing the past, the issue I have with someone like A-Rod is not even that, oh, he's just an idiot. No, if you ask him, like, what should a good hitter do? He'd be like, hit the ball hard, on a line, this, that, and the third. It's like, yes, that's what we also want them to do. I also want a hitter to have good quantity of contact.
The funny thing
is, good swing decisions.
We want them to make contact, too. It's just like, it's harder to do that nowadays. You look at everyone posts the 2009 Yankees lineup, and it's like, oh, Melky Cabrera was hitting ninth, and he hit 290 that year. But it's like, if Melky Cabrera played at that, if you dropped a 24-year-old Melky Cabrera into today's game, he's hitting like 250, not 290. Like, mm-hmm. it's a different league. The average, like, in terms of our lineup versus the average batting average, we're not that far off from where we were in 2009. In terms of overall production, this past season was like even better than 09 in a lot of ways. So obviously, it looks good to hit 300, but it just doesn't happen anymore. And that's a league-wide thing. It's not an issue with the team approach.
Again, it's like, dude, from 2000, I'm going to make another basketball reference here. 2003-04 season, one guy averaged more than 25 points per game. Does that mean that everybody in the NBA couldn't score and that they sucked at basketball offensively? No, it's just the era. Sometimes the era produces raw results, and we have to adjust off of that.
Yeah.
Baseball is the same game. This isn't even like a new concept. In 1968, or was it the early 60s, pitchers killed
68
everybody.
68 was year of the pitcher.
Yes, year of the pitcher, correct. And they had to make rule changes to adjust off of that. It wasn't because the guys in 1968 were worse than the guys in 1945. It was because baseball, just like, it's different. It's a different game. Guys learn things. Player development changes. The way we understand the game changes. Hitting techniques, pitching techniques, all change. I mean, 5 years ago, you were ditching your bad sinker to throw a back-spinning four-seamer, and now everyone's like, no, bring that bad sinker back because it's another pitch and it's the year of the mix. Let's go all throw these pitches. It was like, oh, splitters might hurt your arms, and now it's like, dude, if you can throw a splitter, please. Like, somebody throw something with a splitter. Sweepers for a year were the craze, and then everyone's like, actually, we kind of like these pitches that drop and don't – we like the gyro slider. Bring back the gyro slider. Clay Holmes is kind of like the funniest – it's funny because he was like in the laboratory for the sweeper revolution, and he had to counter adjust by throwing his hard slider again. All of this is to say, like, I think we need to stop talking about baseball like these guys don't know how to play baseball, and more like, hey, well, okay, why are they trying to hit for power? Instead of, these guys are trying to hit for power because they don't know how to play baseball.
The whole like shorten up and go the other way mentality, and then it only hurts our point of view now, because you see a guy like Ernie Clement go on the craziest Linsanity run ever in the playoffs, and then everyone says, oh, why doesn't everyone just hit like Ernie Clement? And it's like, yeah, because Ernie Clement's never going to do that again, and that's not a sustainable way of hitting and producing offense for most players. So,
Ernie Clement had a .313 fucking on-base percentage. People need to stop with this whole, like, you need a guy like that's pesky and gets on base. He doesn't get on base! He does not get on base! He was a league-average baseball player and had a hitter. Actually, he was better than league-average baseball player. Very good defensive player. He had a one very good postseason, And cool, it works. Sometimes that happens. And other times, you've got dudes who all they do is strike out, and suddenly they can hit in the postseason. Ryan McMahon was like, what, the team's second or third best playoff hitter? All he does is whiff.
Ryan McMahon last year sucked for Toronto. Addison Barger's that same guy. He's a big whiff guy, big raw power, swings for the fences. And he ended up having a good postseason, too.
Are we going to pretend that Giancarlo Stanton is this shorten up and go the other way guy? Giancarlo Stanton, his postseasons are the exact same. I'm going to go up there and take freaking daddy hacks and hit 460-foot missiles. Chris, you were witness to those. Are those cheap shots, the ones that he hit in the LCS, or are those absolute fucking nukes off these loser pitchers who hang a bullshit slider, which is faster than the fastballs thrown in the fucking 90s, by the way? It's like 86 slider. That's cheese, bro. I'm hitting that, bro. Yeah. Back then, it's like, dude, that's my fastball. Of course, guys are swinging and missing.
Dude, I was there for both those piss missiles he hit against the Guardians, dude, and like both times, bro. Whole stadium. As soon as he made contact, man, just head sank, dude. It was incredible.
Well, no, he should have shortened up and gone the other way.
Well, I'm looking at a IKF shortened up and went the other way in the postseason. 40 plate appearances, 10% strikeout rate. Look at that. He's a great player, right?
How's Andre Jimenez?
IKF had a 7 WRC plus in the postseason. He hit 162, 184, 216 was his slash. Zero power. He did nothing. He did nothing. It's the same. He's the same archetype as. I think Clement's a better version of what he does, but it's not the archetype. It's guys go on runs in the playoffs, and it can happen to anyone, any type of player.
I do like Ernie Clement, the player, though. I did think I actually wanted him going into this year a little bit. I was like, hey, deep glove is good, but we're not going to get to trade for an in-division player. But that's neither here nor there. Ryan scouting. My I'm an analytics guy, and I liked Ernie Clement.
Wait, do you like Daniel Schneeman?
Huh?
You like Daniel Schneeman? Because that's who I want for some reason.
Yo, dude, Daniel Schneeman, like, I like these, like, platoon utility man, good defense. You hope and pray you can get something offensively, because if you do, then they're really viable big leaguers. Like, that's an analytics thing. There are a lot of people who hate analytics who tell you, like, before this postseason, Ernie Clement's a loser. Actually, I remember, like, Ernie Clement being looked at as a loser, because I remember I follow some Blue Jays fans. I see the people in their mentions, too. So that's neither here nor there. We'll move on to the next question. Any updates on the starting pitching market with Blackburn back? Seems like they're unwilling to spend for Amai. Colton Dawson asked that question. Thank you for the question, Colton. Is it fair to say that Blackburn it's not why they won't sign Amai if they don't sign Amai? Is that where we're at, guys? Do you agree there?
$1 million.
All right. And then the second part of this question, it seems like the Yankees' opinion, or it seems like the Yankees' chances of Amai have lowered. The kind of the feeling that I've gotten is that it's not a player they're like enamored with. And there were points in time where it's like, there's intrigue. They want to get back in the Japanese market. These things blend into, hey, let's try and go after this guy. And it's like, all right, Boris wants ace money. Amai's not an ace. So that seems to be the big issue here. Boris wants this guy to get paid like an ace. And not only the Yankees, other teams in baseball look at him and go, he's not an ace.
Yeah, I think the one thing on that is right now it seems unlikely, but based on the industry consensus, if we get to a point where, I mean, he only has 10 days left to sign. If we get to a point where it's 7 or 8 days from now and he hasn't signed yet and no one's going to Boris's number, Boris is going to have to come down eventually. And maybe we do sneak back in at the end and make a competitive offer. But
I mean,
based on how things
happen with the something coming down, like Munateka, what did he get, like $34 million?
Yeah. He was projected 9 figures and he got 2 years, $34 million. So it's like it's definitely a possibility. And I think the only concern I have right now in terms of competition is probably the Cubs. If the Cubs meet Boris higher than most of the other teams are willing to meet Boris. But if it comes down to the point where if the Cubs, Phillies, Yankees, and Mets are all in a very similar region in terms of contract, I think there's a chance where we can go and get them and steal them at the end.
I will also say in regard to this, I'm going to give you guys a little bit of like background on the Murakami and the White Sox thing even. There were White Sox people who 24 to 48 hours before he signed were pessimistic of their chances, feeling as if the market had gotten too hot for Murakami, all for that to not be the case. So these things change with one phone call. Look at the Yankees' interest with Amai in early December compared to now. These things change with one phone call. And if Boris's price tag comes down, if it's a shorter-term deal with opt-outs, that's not going to scare the Yankees away because there's no picks attached there. But if the Yankees are going to have to pay you know, $25 million a year for 7 years for Tatsuya Mai, they're, in their mind, it's like, hey, he's not an ace. He's not a number two even for us right now. They think of him as number three, number four, who can be a number two. But that's kind of where that's at. So, guys, any final notes on Tatsuya Mai?
Wait and see.
Yeah, wait and see. I think that's where it's at. And look, it could happen while we're recording. It could happen whenever. And I'm not going to be stunned if he ends up a Yankee. I'm not going to be stunned if he ends up not a Yankee is kind of where I'm at, which is definitely a step back from a few weeks ago. Now, my final question is regarding Austin Wells. Or the final question is regarding Austin Wells. This is from Luke Becker. He goes, I was personally disappointed in his 2025 season as I expected him to take a major step forward offensively. How do you feel about Wells and what can fans reasonably expect from him in 2026? Jacob, we'll start with you.
I mean, I think it was fair to be disappointed with him. He definitely took a massive step back in terms of swing decisions, which I think was the root of most of his problems this year. He's swinging early in counts. He wasn't taking his walks. I think his walk rate was like half of what it was his rookie season, which is interesting. And even with that disappointment, I think he provides a pretty high floor for the catching position. He's a really good catcher. We know this. And we know that he's got traits to like as a hitter. He displayed the walk rate as a rookie. He has some power. So I think you have to, again, you have to kind of just wait and be patient with him and hope he can rediscover that swing decisions that he had in 2024. Maybe discover some more power going to the short porch and right. Because the floor is high enough that you can gamble and wait it out with this guy and see what he could do to reach his ceiling in the next few years.
I'm right there on the same page. I mean, a little disappointing, yeah. Definitely took a step backwards, yeah. But, I mean, I trust the talent. I trust the talent enough. I mean, going into his third full year, 20 home runs at the catcher spot, like I'll always take. And, again, just, you know, if not the best framer, one of the best framers in the sport. So, I'm okay with Austin Wells. A little disappointed, yeah. But, I firmly believe, like, death being pointed at me, this is going to be far better this year.
Yeah, and in regard to Austin Wells, I want to mention, like, the disappointment is he went from a good player to not a great player. He just remained a good player. And I think we all hope he can become a great player. And even in 24, there were spurts where it's like, this dude is an all-star. Mm-hmm. And we just didn't get that in 2025. Yeah. Instead, we just got a good player. I did almost miss a question. And I kind of have to shout out Jacob here because he was highlighting like a motherfucker on the outline. And I'm like, oh my God, I missed this. And this is in regard, this is from John Cena. Might be the wrestler, might not be. I couldn't come up with like a John Cena reference. I'm not a wrestling guy personally.
Come on, you know John Cena? He's like the most
famous
one.
I know him. No, I can do this, but like I didn't have something off the top of my head. Like I was gonna make a I can't see him joke, but like it's on paper, so like it doesn't. I'm not good at this. I'm not good at jokes.
Terrible podcaster. Yeah. Many are saying.
but his question is my questions regarding the offense. I understand the Yankees had a great regular season offense. I believe the best in baseball. In my opinion, though, it's clear without some type of two for Judge, like a Tucker, we won't get far. I worry on relying on Jazz and Grisham to have career years again and stand not continuing to go down the age curve is a mistake. I think this offense could turn into a disaster if we run it back, but I'd love to hear your thoughts. Chris, I'm going to start with you. We'll go to Jacob, and then we'll go from there. Thoughts on where you're at with this offense right now?
A disaster. I mean, okay, so for me, a disaster means not winning a World Series, and I think you do need a two during Aaron Judge's prime to win a World Series. So, no, I definitely agree. I kind of said to you a couple times, I think maybe off microphone, Ryan, that before this free agency, it was like, if you're going to feel the impact loss of Juan Soto, it wasn't going to be last year, it's going to be this year. Because last year, Trent Grisham had a career year, like all the home runs, none of the doubles. And that kind of, I mean, him and Bellinger kind of, you know, absorbed enough of Juan Soto's offense that he didn't really feel it. Now, asking Trent Grisham to duplicate that is definitely a really scary thought, which is why, you know, I would love Tucker. Now, it does feel like this team will go Bellinger, not Tucker. And with that being the case, it definitely is worrisome. It feels a little bit glass cannon-y if they don't add a true number two. At the same time, though, like the thing about that glass cannon is when it fires. And, you know, you're hopeful for the continued growth from a Jazz Chisholm. So, scary, yes. Disaster potentially, end of the world, no, if that checks.
Yeah, I think I would say in regards to disaster, I think the disaster scenario is Judge getting hurt. And if you don't have a number two, if you don't have a Tucker, then this lineup minus Judge probably becomes a league average, if not below league average offense. And mm-hmm. that could be an issue. But again, for most teams, I think it's the same. Maybe we are a little bit more we have more of our eggs in the number one basket than most teams do. So, of course, I would love to go get a Kyle Tucker because of that. But I don't think – I think I have an issue with how our fans perceive guys like Grisham and Jazz. Like, a career year – I feel like people still have this very old school type of like, oh, what if Jazz or Grisham had their Brady Anderson or Darren Erstad like one in a million season just now and then return to what they were before. But I think we have data on these guys that tells us the changes they've made exactly. And the way that Jazz and Grisham both improved in since becoming Yankees seems pretty sustainable to me. So I'm not saying they're going to go out there and repeat their seasons, but they should both be good players, barring some drastic, whether it's an injury or drastic regression that we can't foresee. But I don't know. I think I like the current guys we have right now. I do think we would definitely benefit from another big-time bat like Tucker. But if we bring back Cody, or even if we run with Jason in left field, I think that's enough offense. And as long as Judge is healthy, I think we're going to be one of the top offenses in baseball.
I think their weaknesses are against lefties, and Bellinger addresses a big part of that weakness. Maybe you bring in another right-handed bench bat. That's neither here nor there. But I feel like people aren't realizing how high the Yankees are going off of from 25 in the sense of, okay, I think we all can sit here and agree they're not going to score as many runs per game and have as good of an OPS as they did last year. I think that's like an agreement. Like, I don't think that's what's going to happen. It's not impossible, but it's probably not going to happen.
I mean, if we bring back Bellinger, I could see it. Like we talked about this last week.
This is the median outcome.
We talked about this last week where we were replacing, 250 or 300 plate appearances of terrible ball from third base. And I think if McMahon takes a slight step up, which I think we have plans for him in terms of finding the short porch, kind of similar to what we did with Jazz, I think there's a higher floor at our worst positions. And even with Volpe's going to be healthy this year. I think there's a chance our worst hitters won't be as bad as they were last year, even if the top hitters are around the same level, if not a little bit worse.
I'm really high on Ryan McMahon heading into the year, too. Like, really high on him.
I think, and this kind of plays, I guess I kind of, like, danced around a little too much. My point here is, if you were to say the Yankees are going to get 10% worse offensively, and that's a pretty, like, that's a really harsh team-wide expectation. They're still going to be really freaking good offensively.
Mm-hmm.
That's how good they were last year. And that's the issue that I think people have in regard to building rosters is they're so dependent on 7-game sample sizes. There are a lot of conclusions that are drawn in the postseason on rosters, and it's not that you can't feel that way. It's not that you can't feel disappointed or feel like, wow, this group really let me down in the biggest games, and that has happened too many times for the Yankees in the postseason. It's why they haven't won a World Series. But just because it was does not mean it will be. That is a very important part about the postseason. Yes, there are teams that go from chokers to winners, and sometimes that happens overnight. Sometimes that happens over the course of a decade. I know you can't really compare it. It's apples. It's not apples to apples, but like the Dodgers were chokers until they just won it all in 2020. And even then, they weren't really respected until they did it in 24. So there are people who looked at like 2013 to 2023 as choke, 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 fake championship, choke, choke, choke. Those guys were known as chokers.
Yeah, I mean, I look at like what the Brewers just did in the playoffs, and when they had like, I think it was, it's Durbin. Durbin's the only hitter in their lineup who did anything in the championship series against the
Rocking
Dodgers.
Rocking a Durbin. So, my dog.
It's literally like, do you look at that lineup and you say they're a terrible lineup because they were so bad in October for 4 games? It's like, I don't think you could do that. I don't think that kind of goes against everything that the way that we perceive the game. So I think people definitely are disappointed with how it ended. But again, like our offense in the playoffs wasn't good, but it certainly wasn't terrible. It was the fourth best out of the 12 playoff teams. And if we had good pitching performances, we would have probably made a deeper run. So I definitely think that even if our offense does take a step back, even a fairly drastic one, I think the pitching is still the place that we have to address first.
And I'll also say, like, just to kind of point this out, not because, again, I think that this is not apples to apples. This team added Shohei Ohtani and Yoshinobu Yamamoto. It's not apples to apples. But I will also say Shohei Ohtani had no role in them winning a World Series in 24. I will say that, too. If you look at their top 8 position players in terms of wins above replacement, I think it's five of them were back in 2022 on that 24 team that won a World Series. The nucleus of the Los Angeles Dodgers that couldn't beat the fucking Padres or the Diamondbacks, who won under 90 games, was the same group of guys. Freddie Freeman, two walk-off World Series home runs. That guy was a choker with the Dodgers. Like, I remember seeing the tweets of, this guy's a loser, him and Betts can't win, they're not leaders, X, Y, Z, this, that, the third. This is the same group of guys. It's, I mean, the same group.
Look at the Yankees in 24. It's like you had Verdugo, you had Rizzo, and then you had Judge was barely hitting. So it's like, and they made the run to the World Series, and they lost to
that
one of the best teams. So
mash in the postseason.
Yeah, and it's like,
and they didn't have Judge,
and they weren't as good as the team was this past year. Even with Soto, they weren't as good of an offense.
I also think this group is new, and I don't think people get that about this group. This group is not, like, a lot of people say you're running it back again. This is kind of the first iteration of this specific squad. It's not like this is a core of guys who've been together. I think it was 50-something to 60-something percent of their position player group did not ever play a playoff game with the Yankees before 2025. It's a new group. Yep. Whether you want to hear that or not, it is a new group. And it's not to say that they're going to win the World Series this year. And I don't even think this take has to be vindicated by them winning the World Series. I think a lot of people have to stop with, if you're positive, your take's only vindicated if they win the World Series. It's not, or not even positive.
Well, yeah,
like, this isn't even like an optimistic view. This is like a data-backed view.
I mean, I understand you want to go out there and win every year. That's the goal. But if you're going to doom all year and complain all year and say Cashman doesn't know what he's doing, Boone doesn't know what he's doing, and your proof of that is they didn't win the World Series, then 29 fan bases are right that their team was doing everything wrong all year. Every you're one of 30 if you win. And you're competing against a bunch of other really good teams. This is, even if you do everything perfectly, there's a good chance you're not going to win. So yeah. I don't want to be seen as like a shill or something because I'm defending the front office. But like they've done a good job at getting us there. And at a certain point, our guys need to execute. And again, I think we need to add more to make the pitching staff better this season. Give the bats a better chance to heat up in October this time around. But like, there's always going to be more to do, but I think that there's this idea that the process is flawed, and that's totally overblown within this fan base just because we haven't won a World Series.
And to kind of also add here, and I think this is a good way to wrap the point, to be flawed is not to be bad. To be flawed is just to be human. That is what it is. To have a flawed roster is to be human.
Ryan, dude.
No, I mean, look at, like, do you want to tell me the 2024 Dodgers were an imperfect roster? They had 1.5 starting pitchers. The 2025 Dodgers had 1.5 relievers. Dave Roberts puts in Blake Treinen with a 2-run lead, a fully rested Roky Sasaki, and a rest day the day after. Like, I don't care if you think Aaron Boone is the worst manager ever. Dude. He has never done anything that bad in his life in the postseason, ever.
Clayton Kershaw pitched in like the 15th inning for them that one game because their bullpen was so bad this year. So it's like,
they were saved by what? Like Will Klein, who only made the roster because Tanner Scott, who, mind you, they gave $80 million. They gave him more money than Edwin Diaz, more money than Devin Williams, more money than Robert Suarez. Like, that is a contract that does not look great
right
now.
Yeah, a lot of their investments haven't paid off. Like, Kirby Yates was definitely not worth the $11 or $12 million they paid him this
terrible
past year. Like, they've had some really great ones. Like, obviously, Ohtani is probably worth 2 or 3X what they're paying him. Yamamoto is probably worth more than what they're paying him, and then Snell was worth it in the playoffs. So it's like they've gotten the stars, and it hasn't been because they're not especially virtuous for going out and getting Shohei Ohtani. Ohtani wanted to play for them, and then Yamamoto wanted to play with Ohtani. So it's like it's not like the front office. I really do think Andrew Friedman's the best GM in baseball. Trust me, I've waxed poetic about my love for Andrew Friedman, but it's not like them getting those two guys is proof that they're doing things in a better way.
Yeah, and again, it's like, I don't think this is a matter of the, like, I asked people this now, and I didn't even think about doing this. It's kind of like, okay, if you're gonna make a claim, like, explain it to me. Name 10 organizations ran better than the Yankees. If you can do that and make a strong argument for it, no, screw it. Name five. Ownership, front office,
name two.
All included.
Name two. The only
Dodgers,
one is the Dodgers, probably.
I think the Dodgers, and I'm going to throw a hot take out here. Well, the thing is, if you include ownership, you can't put the Brewers there.
Yeah.
Well, if it was just Brewers, GMs, I'm willing to go with the Brewers here.
I don't know. I like what the Brewers do, but I have my issues with how they operate as well. Yeah,
but again, that's tied to ownership, I think.
Yeah, I know, I agree, but it has to.
But even then,
it's like the Rays. The Rays a few years ago would be up there in terms of efficiency, but it's like they never got over the hump because they didn't have the extra money to spend.
And it's like if we're crowning guys who've never won anything, then what are we doing, right? I realize, like, hey, we're talking about how the Yankees' process is bad. It's like, well, if you're going to tell me the Yankees' process is bad because they have not won a World Series.
You can't put the Brewers in
there. Don't tell me the other processes are good.
Right, and it's like the recent World Series champions are either the Dodgers or teams will fall into the wayside organizationally. Oh. I think the one other front office who before this year had a real claim to this was the Braves. I think the Braves,
they're going to bounce back this year, too. I like what they do, but again, they still have some very strange... like, I don't know, they brought up Didier Fuentes at, like, age 19 or whatever to start games. And
my heart stopped when you first said that name. I was like, wait, whoa.
Did I say it correctly?
Yes, you did. Heart stopped.
No, they didn't call up P. Diddy to pitch at age 19. They called up a prospect. He was a good prospect, but he definitely wasn't ready.
Yeah.
Like the way I see it, the Braves have a lot of Angels-like tendencies, and it's because Perry Minassian was the assistant GM underneath Alex Anthopoulos in Atlanta, but the Angels do it with no talent on the roster, and the Braves do it with a lot of talent on the roster. So it's quirky and fun when the Braves do it, but it's terrible and awful when the Angels do it. So I have my issues with the Braves front office, but they do a pretty good job overall.
Chris, you got any final points you want to add before we wrap here?
No, sir.
Yeah, I just needed that little gap to burp off camera. I can't lie. My face didn't show it, but I just needed that like 2 seconds to get it out. Anywho, we appreciate you guys tuning in here on Fireside Yankees. Thank you guys for sticking around for the hour. If you guys are listening to this on Apple or Spotify, make sure you download and give us the 5-star rating. Watching on YouTube, like, subscribe, comment. Tell us not only what you agree with, tell me what you disagree with. You're like, Ryan, you are a dumb loser. You hate Paul Blackburn. You're the worst. My name is Paul Blackburn. I'm Paul Blackburn's burner. You should be thrown off a cliff. If you're Framber Valdez, you're like, I'd rock you. Like, don't ever talk like that again.
And you picked a lot of fights today.
Yeah. Dude, I'm sorry. It's just the Jake Paul thing is, like, burning into my head.
The Christmas spirit is boiling within you.
Hey, they don't call it boxing day on the 26th for nothing. I scrap, man. I've actually never gotten into a fight. I'm a little Johnny baby.
Right. That's great.
But anywho, thank you guys again for listening. Like, subscribe, turn on that notification bell. Check out our socials, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and, of course, this YouTube page. The YouTubes that Chris and Jacob run, Chris has a lot going on in the college football world. College football playoffs. If you are not even a diehard college football fan. I don't watch college football a lot, but I'm into all the stuff he's covering. And That's Baseball. I've been watching And That's Baseball since before I knew the guy. His content's great. I highly recommend you guys watch. And again, links will be in the description.
Odell Beckham Jr. video on Star Grading Sports. So go watch that. It's getting no views right now. So you guys got to go check it out for me.
And if you think Odell Beckham is a one-catch merchant, I will find you. Anywho. Join the Patreon. Do that, too. We really appreciate your continued support. Happy holidays to you and yours, whatever you celebrate. Hope you guys get some great family time, friends, whatever it may be. We love you guys a lot. Let's go, Yankees. Peace out, everybody.